So by putting it in at a...
I'm happy to welcome you to the tonight's meeting of the Joint Committee to Implement Measure 91. It's May 18th, and I'm really happy that we could all be here.
That's what we're looking at.
In the lead up to this meeting, I was talking to a friend, and he said to me, if you like laws, or if you like sausage, it's probably best not to see either one of them getting made. And that's certainly true from the last week or two of this committee's life. But if you have to be up close and personal and seeing them get made, it's definitely best to really care about the people who are going to be affected by the laws and the policies that you're making. And I think that that is true of everyone on this dais right now, and co-chair Burdick, and for all that it's a funny twist of events that we've gone through, I feel 100% confident that everyone who's engaged in the Joint Committee to Implement Measure 91 sincerely is going to work together hard and diligently and in good faith to try to put together a good Measure 91 bill. So with that, welcome to the meeting, and we're really happy to have all of you there and all of us here, and we wish Co-Chair Burdick a speedy recovery on her sickness. We have an exciting thing that we get to do tonight. After many months of working, each of us in different efforts and a lot of teamwork and collaboration and bipartisan work, we are getting to unveil the framework for a Measure 91 implementation bill. Who'd have thought? So it is our pleasure to have Mark Mayer come back to the dais tonight and walk us through the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3400. It's a whole new thing from the last time we considered House Bill 3400, and you'll see in it, and I think the members of the committee will see in it, a lot of things that they worked on and a lot of things that they recognize. So it's a good starting place for conversation, but to be clear, it's just a starting place. And we value your input, and we want to have plenty of public hearings on this and opportunities to trade ideas and thoughts and get to something we can all feel good about. Okay, with that, Mr. Mayor, if you'd be so kind, I will officially open an informational session and invite you to state your name for the record and kick us off.
Chair Leininger, members of the committee, Mark Mayer, Legislative Council. I'm here to walk through the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3400, which has become the vehicle for the Measure 91 bill. The amendment is loosely divided up into several different sections, and I think I'll probably just briefly address each of those sections before moving on to a more detailed analysis of each one. The first part of the bill, pages 1 through 36, are substantive changes to Measure 91 itself. Those provisions, many of them have been seen before during the testimony of Tom Burns and Patridge of the OLCC for the technical fix bill. And a lot of them have remained relatively unchanged since that time. A lot of them have been tweaked at the request of members. There are also some substantive provisions that have been requested by members. Pages 36 through 52 are merely technical fixes for the most part that merely update references in Measure 91 for purposes of codification, as well as the minimum number of tweaks that our office had to make in order to make it comport with legislative form and style. We try to be very careful with those sections since the intent was not to make any substantive changes there. Pages 52 through... I did have a copy that was tabulated, and I left it in my office. Pages 52 through 72 are point-of-sale taxation. They also include some fixes to Measure 91 revolving around some of the carve-outs for the income tax code and things like that. A lot of technical details there that I probably won't have enough time to get into tonight, but I will talk about the point-of-sale taxation piece when we get to that point. Page 72 through Page 80 is the testing component. This language has remained largely unchanged from the amended language that was originally in Senate Bill 844-6 amendments. The only changes are that we removed references to processing sites. And the reason that we removed those references is that we do not know whether or not a version of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act bill will pass, so we removed those references. I also want to clarify that we do have a repealer in here that if either of the vehicles for the testing and packaging sections does become law that are out there, Senate Bill 844, Senate Bill 936, the testing and packaging sections in this bill will be repealed, and those other sections that have references to the processing sites will take effect. So we have done that. Page 80, as I've alluded to, through page 86, again, is packaging and labeling, which is something that this committee has already seen, embedded, and looked at and gotten response on. The language, again, is largely unchanged from the amended versions of the Dash 6 amendments to Senate Bill 844. Page 86 through 90 is another program that is supposed to be a program that operates for both systems. It's a, we're calling it loosely in the title nurseries, but it's really about propagation of immature marijuana plants and seeds. And it's a program to help establish the system and to allow seeds and starts to be sold or transferred into either the medical program or into the recreational program. The nursery section does not allow for sales to consumers or and does not allow for transfer or sales of mature marijuana plants. I just want to highlight that very quickly. On page 90, we have the research certification. On page 91, the intent is to adjust the crimes in Measure 91. The current crimes related to manufacturing, delivery, or possession of marijuana. I'll talk more specifically about those as we get to that point. Page 101, retail drug outlets, which was, again, part of the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 844. I'll talk a little bit about that if we have time. It's a very minor adjustment. And then finally, temporary provisions, repeals, series placement, operative dates, and the other type of miscellaneous stuff at the end. So that's the basic framework. Those are the major provisions. I think we'll probably spend most of our time in the front matter, and please just interrupt me as I go along and explain what the different provisions do. And I'm just going to, if we've already seen it before, I'm just going to make a note that, you know, this was in the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 844. And if you have any comments on it, you can interrupt me, please, but I'll probably just go right through it. So Section 1, definitions. Again, as I mentioned earlier when with Senator Przanski asked me at the last committee hearing, the intent was to align the definitions as closely as possible to those that were vetted and agreed to for the OHA bill and to use similar terminology and similar language throughout. So we've done that to the best of our ability. And again, I did miss the marijuana, mature marijuana plant language. But I think that the correct thing to do is to fix that in 936, not in Measure 91, because we also have a potential number cap for mature plants in this bill. So these definitions have been looked at and vetted, and very little else has changed since the Dash 1 amendments to 844. Powers and duties of commission on page 7, section 2. Again, this language was looked at in Senate Bill 844-1 amendments. The only change is that the fees that are being collected for purposes other than application, licensing, and renewal fees underneath this section are now going to be going into a fund that we're establishing for purposes of helping to administer and enforce the act. Standard boilerplate language are funneling all the fee monies into a separate fund to make it so that they pay for the act itself up front. On page 10, power to purchase, possess, seize, and dispose. These two sections were both in the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 844. They do not grant any kind of authority to regulate marijuana items. They merely clarify that if there is, that the Oregon Liquor Control Commission or any other state officer, board, commission, corporation, et cetera, that has been granted underneath the statutory laws of the state some sort of regulatory authority, it grants them the authority underneath these sections to basically handle the marijuana items underneath Oregon law. Again, the language has been largely unchanged. Most of the changes are in the next section, regulation of licensees. Although in section 5, we did not change anything except we went ahead and did some form and style changes and clarified some language around secured party. I believe the only reason I put an amendment to section 25 in this section, even though there's no substantive changes here, is to try to keep all the licensee provisions together. So section 6 is the first. Section 6, again, the only language in here that we have included is on page 12. It's from a previous Senate bill, and it's basically lines 3 to 6 on page 12, clarifying that a licensed premises may receive marijuana items only from a marijuana producer, processor, or wholesaler. And the intent there is to just clarify that this is a closed system, and there's not going to be product going from one system into the other system. So not only can they only sell to a not only can a producer, processor, or wholesaler sell to another licensee, they can also only receive from a licensee under Measure 91. Section 7, the change there is on page 13, lines 4 to 9, where we've eliminated the specific denotions of what the licenses are going to cost and the application fees are going to be. And that'll come up in a little bit.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
When you're walking through the bill, I think it would be great to help to people in the room who don't have a copy of the bill in front of them or who might be listening, if you could try to describe things, you know, so that they have a rough sense of what you're saying in addition to the our ability to track it. So if you could just kind of make it a little bit more easy to discern for an outsider, that would be great.
All right. Thank you, Chair. So in Section 7, which is the it's Section 28 of Measure 91, which is the basic provision relating to making an application for becoming a licensee. Subsections 4 and 5 denoted specific fee amounts for application and licensure fees, and what we've done is we have eliminated those sections here, and we have included language allowing fees to be set by rule in other sections, which I will discuss in a moment. Is that better, Chair?
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Section 8, which is a general provision relating to the commission's ability to refuse licenses to applicants, initial applicants. We did not change the substance of this section at all, with the exception of there was a provision that allowed the commission to determine whether or not there were sufficient licensed premises in certain localities. And we removed that language on the basis that there are going to be some other control mechanisms for controlling how much plants or canopy size or location of retail stores that are going to come up later in the bill. And the idea was that this language ran contrary to some of those other provisions that I'll discuss later. The language could be reinstated. It doesn't necessarily conflict with them, but there are other mechanisms for controlling size and locality that we'll see as I move through these sections. Section 9 of the amendment deals with the commission's ability to revoke or suspend licenses. And again, we have largely left this section unchanged. There is some language eliminated at the end of the section regarding civil penalties. We have created later in the bill civil penalty powers using standard boilerplate, which I will cover when we get to that part. So I think really the first major change that this committee, Section 10, excuse me, brand new boldface section, is standard boilerplate language. The committee has seen this language before relating to the commission being able to require fingerprints for individuals who make an application to the commission for licensure. Section 11 of the amendment. Again, this was language that the committee saw with Senate Bill 844-1. We did quite a bit of cleanup in here, and I think that the primary thing that we did in this section substantively is we removed the reference to a date, and we moved that reference to a temporary section so that when we codify this, we don't have a date past the time that that date occurs in permanent law. But the substance of that provision, on or before January 4th, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission shall issue applications. It is picked up in a temporary provision, which is at the end of the bill. So it's not that we've removed that actual substantive mandate that they do this on or before January 4th. It's that we've merely moved it to a temporary section, so it does not become part of the permanent law. License holders. This is where most of the substantive provisions that the committee as a whole hasn't seen yet, and the public as a whole hasn't seen yet, come into play. License holders, as you know, are the producers, the processors, the wholesalers, and the retailers. And it was easier to handle these separately, as there were slight distinctions between what was asked to include in licensing each of these different types of license holders, although the language is fairly similar throughout each of the provisions. I will go ahead and walk through Section 12, which is production of marijuana. We merely link it to Section 20. This is on page 17. The first thing that we spell out is that if you're going to hold a license to produce marijuana, you have to make an application as specified in Section 28, which we've already looked at. We've included language that you provide proof that each individual listed on an application has been a resident of the state for 2 or more years and is 21 years of age or older. And that's tracking the language that we used in the OMMA rewrite bill. And then also must meet requirements of rules adopted by the commission under Section 3. And then we direct the commission to adopt rules that, 1, require a producer to renew the license annually. And this is building off of another request, technical fix request by the commission, but we handled a little bit differently in the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 844. Here we just based it off of some of the language that was in the OMMA rewrite bill. Establish application, licensure, and renewal of licensure fees for marijuana producers, and require marijuana produced by marijuana producers to be tested to ensure the public health and safety. Require marijuana producers to submit a report describing the applicant's expected energy and water usage for the upcoming year, and impose any other standard on the operation of marijuana producers that ensures the public health and safety. Again, not trying to change fundamentally the structure there, but just to spell out a little bit of what the committee and what the commission asked for. Annual renewal, adoption of fees, make sure it's tested, public health and safety rules, and then also the report describing expected energy and water usage. We do direct at the bottom of page 17, and this language is picked up in each of these sections as well, that the commission may adopt rules that establish merit-based criteria in awarding licenses. And those include provision of training, apprenticeship opportunities, and living wages and benefits offered to employees. But they're not limited to those things either underneath this section. So the commission may consider those things in awarding licenses. Subsection 5.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Pazansky.
Mark, regarding that, it almost sounds like, are you under the impression that we may be limiting the number of licenses that can be issued in the state?
For subsection 4 on that?
Yes.
I would regard that as preferential treatment for license holders who submit information demonstrating that they are going to be a functional and a functional business that is able to provide for these different things,
okay,
but not necessarily a limitation on the licenses.
Okay, thank you.
Page 18, we do direct the commission to consult with the Department of Energy in adopting rules for the submission of reports regarding water and energy usage. And then finally, in subsection 6, the bill specifically states that fees adopted underneath this section may not exceed the cost of administering Sections 3 to 70, Chapter 1, Oregon Laws 2015 with respect to marijuana producers. And I think it's important to point out that the language is a little bit different than what we generally draft in our office when we create a fee program. Generally, we draft fees reasonably calculated to pay for the costs. Here, the language is different, says to not exceed, so the commission can go under the cost if they choose to do so, and I think that that is something that is up for consideration. And that is the standard language that we've kind of dumped into each of these with slight deviations. I'll point out those slight deviations as we go through each of these license holders. Section 13 continues to build on the regulation of marijuana producers. I would consider this language to be largely a placeholder section, as I think that there's still some debate out there as to how this language is eventually going to look. The idea is to restrict the size of premises for which a license has been issued for the first, second, and potentially third year of licensure, so that there is a good actor system, smaller premises, smaller business operations, and then as you are neither suspended or revoked or under any kind of disciplinary action, the size of your canopy or your grow site can change. The way that this is drafted right now, we have left blanks. So first off, it's important that we specify that indoor grows will be limited by canopy size, square feet. Outdoor grows will be limited by the number of mature marijuana plants, but we haven't filled in those blanks yet because I think there's still some debate as to what the blanks will be, what eventually will go into those blanks. We've also included some standard language that would work legally, but we might want to continue to build off of specific legislatively directed tiers for subsequent licensing years. But in subsection 3, what we've written for the time being is that the commission may adopt rules to provide for an increase in the size of the premises of either the indoor grows or the outdoor grows for subsequent years of licensure. So right now it's a permissive act by the commission to go ahead and provide for an increase. We do specify in subsection 4 that the commission shall continue to impose restrictions, meaning the premises restrictions, during subsequent years of licensure if the commission determines that there's a lack of market demand for any associated increase in the availability of marijuana items. So if the market just isn't there, commission is directed to go ahead and keep the tier at the current cap. So I think the idea here is that the commission look at what the market availability is and what the demand is, and as that demand increases, go ahead and allow the tier system to kick up to the next tier and award the good actors in that system. Again, I think largely this is a placeholder at this time. There's been a lot of ideas around this, but what we've done here is we've drafted something that would work legally and just give people something to respond to. So section 14, marijuana processors. Again, we go ahead and we specify that they must make application as provided in Section 28 of the Act, must meet rules adopted by the Commission under Subsection 3, and provide proof that each individual listed on an application has been a resident of the state for 2 or more years and is 21 years of age or older. So the same three stipulations there. And then under subsection 3, directing the Commission to adopt rules requiring annual renewal, adoption of fees, making sure that processed marijuana items are tested, and finally, a kind of catch-all public health and safety standards requirement. And then we specifically tie that into the different types of marijuana products that might be processed: edibles, concentrates, extracts, and other types of cannabinoid products identified by the commission by rule. Hopefully to allow the commission to have the legislative direction to adopt rules for different types of products. Again, the language about adopting merit-based criteria and limiting fees so that they may not exceed the cost of administering the act with respect to marijuana processors. So again, the marijuana processors, producers, wholesalers, they should only be on the hook for paying things that are a cost to the commission in the way of regulating those specific licensed entities. Section 15 is the same for wholesalers. And again, there's no special deviation here from, unlike the other two. This is basically lays out the most basic of frameworks for this, where we have make application. Each person must be a resident of the state for 2 or more years and 21 years of age or older and meet those requirements adopted by the commission by rule. Annual renewal, fees, require marijuana items received, kept, stored, or delivered by a marijuana wholesaler to be tested, and finally impose any standard. And again, I want to clarify this to be tested language is not intended to mean that the testing is going to occur at each stage. The to be tested is to allow the commission some leeway that if it is determined that the testing is handled better upstream or that it happens once at the producer stage, it doesn't have to happen again. It just has to be tested at any point. Merit-based criteria language is there, as well as the cap on the fees, may not exceed the cost of administering the act. And then finally, in Section 16, we do retailers. I won't walk through everything again, but I do want to point out that there is a special provision here on may not be located within 1,000 feet of a school, the same language from the dispensary provision in the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. And just as we have done with the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act and Senate Bill 936, we have the same grandfather clause here in Section 17, which would allow a dispensary, or excuse me, in this case, a retail location to continue to exist if a school is established after the retail location opens. But we won't have the same problem as we had with the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act here.
Senator Prezant.
Just for clarification, when you said 936, meaning 964?
Correct. Sorry.
Thank you.
So those are probably the major portions of this to look at that people haven't seen before are those sections and what those sections are attempting to do. I will point out that the 1,000 feet within a school rule is only pertains to the retail locations, and the energy usage plan only pertains to the processors, or the producers, excuse me. Section 18 of the bill, segregated premises. This was language that we have modified slightly from what the commission requested for the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 844. And again, the idea here is that the commission should have the ability, if there is a duly licensed or an establishment of premises that has more than 2 or 3 licenses, whatever, that they may segregate those premises into the different operations so that if they're going to be doing both edibles and concentrates, or they're going to be both selling at retail and keeping a warehouse on the same premises, that the commission can direct them to segregate those premises and handle their operations separately. Section 19 and 20 of the bill is probably the last thing that I worked with Mr. Tom Burns on, the marijuana handlers. This language hasn't been looked at by a lot of people, so it's probably new to some of the members of the committee as well as to the public. The intent here is to require people who work in retail locations to obtain some sort of minimal certification for being able to work in a store. I do want to mention that this is a provision that is of great interest for people who work in concentrates and edibles, and if the committee desires it, we can write a similar provision for people who work at processing facilities as well. So it would just require a little bit of modification. I won't go into great detail on that, on those sections there. If you flip to page 26, sections 21 and 22, these were also included in Senate Bill 844-1, and they are largely unchanged. Section 21 requires all licensed premises to maintain on file with the commission a bond with a corporate surety authorized to transact business in the state, and the bond is going to be in an amount that the commission determines is acceptable, and the purpose of the bond is to pay for civil penalties, taxes, or other monies owed to the commission or to other agencies if one of these premises fails to do that. Section 22 also has remained largely unchanged from Senate Bill 844-1 amendments. This requires retail sellers to carry insurance, liability insurance, or a bond in an amount of $300,000 or more for purposes of mitigating liability that may be incurred by the retail location in the event that there is a cause of action brought against them because they sold a marijuana item and the consumer used it in a fashion that allows them to file a cause of action against them. So it's actually for the protection. I think that the thing that was the most contentious during the hearing in Senate Bill 844-1 amendments was the actual amount, and our office did not receive any information on the amount of $300,000. So that is what we left in this current draft, but I think it might be something that just going to draw your attention to revisit. Section 23, the seed to sale tracking system. Again, this was from Senate Bill 844-1, and the commission asked for specific legislative authority to develop and maintain a system for tracking marijuana items offered for retail sale in the state, and that we include language that will allow them to impose the tracking at the production stage and to follow the production of marijuana items all the way through the distribution chain up to the point at which an end consumer purchases the product. The language also directs them to keep and maintain a database of information acquired pursuant to the act, so they'll be keeping track of all this information. Section 24, identification requirement, was another technical fix asked for by the commission. Senate Bill 844-1. And I think that the primary substantive change here is on page 29, subsection 2. This provision requires retail licensees and other licensees before handing marijuana items off to basically verify age, to look at a piece of verification, a person's passport or driver's license or some other identification in order to check age and identification. And the commission asked for rulemaking ability to exempt a licensee or a licensee representative from the provisions of this section. Section 25 through Section 28. These are all provisions that were included for basically for protection of persons under 21 years of age. Some of them amend Measure 91. Some of them amend other provisions of law. I think the most important provision to look at here is Section 26 on page 30. This is the age verification scanner language that we looked at in the previous version of Senate Bill 844-1. If you remember, that provision allowed the commission to require a retailer to use an age verification scanner to ensure that somebody who's purchasing a marijuana item is of legal age. We did include some new language this time around that I'll go ahead and read out loud. The commission may not retain any information obtained under this section after verifying a person's age, and the commission may not use any information obtained under this section for any purpose other than verifying a person's age. So the intent there is to direct the commission that the minute that the age verification is complete, then that information is not kept, not stored, or maintained, and it's not used for any other purpose. It's just verify the age and then allow the person to purchase the product. Sections 27 and 28 actually amend other provisions of law, and the idea here is to just adjust laws that currently pertain to alcohol beverages by minors so that they equally apply to marijuana items by persons 21 years of age and under. I don't think that there's much contention on that, and that language has remained largely unchanged from Senate Bill 844-1 amendments. The next major section is enforcement. Page 32, Section 29. This is the standard boilerplate civil penalty language that we include with most of the bills that we write nowadays. In addition to any other liability or penalty provided by law, the commission may impose for each violation of a provision of the Act of Measure 91 a civil penalty that does not exceed $5,000 for each day that the violation occurs. The commission shall impose civil penalties under this section in a manner provided by ORS 183-745, and then the monies collected will go into the fund that we've established in this act to help pay for administering the act. I want to mention here real quickly that as I'm reading this right now, I see a couple things that stand out. One is there's inconsistency here between a $5,000 civil dollar penalty that we're allowing here and the $500 one that we wrote into the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. And then the second thing is that probably this should be oriented specifically toward licensees and licensee representatives, which would be a drafting error on my part.
Those both sound like good changes to me.
Section 30, again, this was from Senate Bill 844-1. It's the language about marijuana enforcement inspectors, and basically this provision allows the commission to use enforcement inspectors who would have certain powers related to the criminal statutes in this state, to conduct inspections and investigations, make arrests and seizures, aid in prosecutions for offenses, issue citations, etc. For purposes related to regulating or prohibiting activities related to marijuana items. The language is largely copied from the Oregon Liquor Control Act statutes, although we have updated it, of course, so that it would reflect marijuana items instead. Again, the language is largely unchanged from those Dash 1 amendments, and it does track the Liquor Control Act statute fairly closely, I believe. We did add, however, subsection 3, and I'll just read it out loud. A marijuana enforcer inspector may not conduct inspections and investigations for purposes of ensuring compliance with ORS 475-300 to 475-346. That's the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, and the provision probably would not allow that anyway. This is really clarification language just to clarify that these inspectors are not going to be used for conducting inspections and investigations with respect to the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act.
Mr. Mayor, could we also make it clear, because I think it will help ease some people's concerns, that they will not be doing inspections related to home grows, only licensees, right?
That would make underneath Section 6 of Measure 91, correct?
I guess just overall that OLCC personnel will not be doing any inspections related to home grows, just as to licensee compliance.
That would make sense.
Great.
Yeah, and I can write that in. Section 31 is, again, it's fairly standard boilerplate relating to subpoenas, and it was requested by the Commission for the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 844, and that language is largely unchanged. Basically allows the Commission to, for purposes of this particular act, the provisions of ORS 183-440 apply to subpoenas issued by the Commission, and any authorized agent of the Commission ties it into our normal subpoena processes so that we don't have to basically reinvent the wheel there. Section 32, this is the fund that we have created for the Commission where all the fee monies and civil penalty monies will be placed, and it's standard boilerplate. And we've basically written in that standard language that monies in the fund are continuously appropriated to the Commission to administer and enforce Sections 3 to 70, Chapter 1, Oregon Laws 2015. And hopefully the idea here is that eventually the licensees will be paying for the program once it gets up and running and it doesn't cost as much, and that the tax revenues will all be going into the distribution account where the distributions are going to be made for the for various purposes. The next several sections are along with the licensee sections that we covered earlier, the producer, processor, wholesaler, and retailer sections. The next sections are also probably the ones that are the most different from what anybody has seen at this point, and the ones that we kind of deviated the most from Measure 91 itself, accepting the technical fix bill that we had, amendments that we looked at earlier. So Section 33, we updated the preemption language in Measure 91 to use our standard boilerplate at this point, except as expressly authorized by the statutory laws of this state, the authority to regulate marijuana items and the production, processing, and sale of marijuana items, and the authority to impose a tax or fee on the production, processing, or sale of marijuana items is vested solely in the Legislative Assembly. And the idea there is it's not going to necessarily curtail city or county ordinances from doing this, but there would have to be some sort of statutory authority for cities and counties to do it. On page 34, section 34, we have used the language from the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act for the reasonable regulations language, revolving around the reasonable time, place, and manner regulations. So again, here the idea is to try to remain consistent between the two acts and to create some sort of clarification and uniformity between how the two acts will be applied.
Mr. Mayor, can I jump in?
Yes.
So since the ability of local jurisdictions to regulate things has been something on the top of people's minds,
correct,
in the last couple of weeks, I just want to be clear that it's my belief that the language that you have here is totally it's consistent with all of the Measure 91 things, because those are as to opting out. This just says that local jurisdictions would not impose additional inconsistent with these land use laws rules. Is that right?
That is correct, Chair Leininger. Yes. So for Section 34, we have used the same language that we used in the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. Reasonable limitations on the hours during which a retailer may operate, conditions on the manner in which a retailer may sell marijuana items, reasonable requirements related to a public's access to a premises for which a license has been issued, reasonable limitations on where a premises for which a license has been issued may be located. And then I think that we might have a little bit of a cleanup in 936 a little bit later. Subsection 2 is the actual, on page 35, actually spells out that the governing body of a city or county may adopt ordinances that impose reasonable regulations on the operation of businesses located at premises for which a license has been issued. So there's the definition portion, which talks about what these reasonable regulations are, and then the authority granted to the cities and counties to enact ordinances. And then we have another line in here, which might be another cleanup for 964, regulations adopted under this section must be consistent with city and county comprehensive plans, zoning ordinances, and applicable provisions of public health and safety, just to ensure that there is a consistent approach to how all these different regulations are adopted. Section 35, this language was in the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 844, which caused a bit of stir for the committee earlier. And Representative Helm and I have worked on this language in an attempt to address those concerns. I think I might just walk through them at this point to demonstrate how we've attempted to modify the language in order to address the committee's earlier concerns. So the first thing is we specify that marijuana is a crop for certain agricultural purposes. And in the original Dash 5 amendments, we only tied it into farm use as defined in ORS 215-203. Here we also tie it into other various agricultural-specific provisions. It's a crop for purposes of farming practice as defined in ORS 3930. It's a product of farm use as described in ORS 308A62, and a product of agricultural activity as described in ORS 568909. And I would love to be able to elaborate on each of those, but I believe Representative Helm would be a much better source of information for that. The primary dwelling language is fairly intact from the last draft. What we did do is we changed the language in what is now subsection 3, which is the processing language, which originally there was a mandate for counties to treat this the same as the extent to which it's provided for other crops underneath the land use statutes. And here we've kind of flipped it and made it more of a permissive read. The processing of marijuana leaves or flowers on a premises that is located on exclusive farm use land and for which a license has been issued under Section 20 is permissible to the extent that it is provided for other crops under ORS 215-213 sub 2 or 215-283 sub 2. And for the purposes of processing marijuana on lands outside urban growth boundaries, a county may allow marijuana processing through a home occupation permit that is consistent with the county's zoning ordinances. So we've made that second part of that permissive as opposed to a mandatory home occupation permit provision. The tie-in to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission requesting a land use compatibility statement has remained so that the commission will be aware of what the land use provisions are for purposes of issuing licenses. But the language that was tacked on to the end of this provision about county having to amend its comprehensive land use zone has been dropped from this draft, so there will be no LUBA axle problem in this particular draft anymore. That is the substantive changes to Measure 91. Are there any questions on those? I I know there's a lot. If you look at them all, I do believe that about two-thirds of them are still technical fixes from the Dash 1 amendments or other things that we've seen and have worked on throughout this entire process. So I've been working with different members on different pieces of this, and hopefully we've got it up to where it's almost a complete product.
Thank you, Mab Coach Humer. Thank you for all the work on this. It's really quite extensive. I've several questions, Madam Chair, if it's okay to go through a couple different sections to get some clarification.
Yes.
Sections 21 and 22, Mark, we talked about this before when it came up. Are we certain that bonds and insurance will be available to companies that are in the marijuana industry? And if it does not turn out that there are bonding or insurance sources, do we have a way to have the commission adopt to that reality?
Chair Leininger, Representative Buckley, I believe that it would be wise to include an exemption for that very purpose, given the banking issues that we are faced with. So, yeah, I think that would need to be exemption language that we include.
So a change.
There needs to be a change there, I agree.
Yes, I think, did you want to continue your questions? All right, Senator
Fraley. Well, it's a question related to that comment.
Great.
To the issue. So, you know, I've been wondering about the very question about the availability of surety bonds and performance bonds. And if we do a straight waiver, I don't think we accomplish protecting the state's interest as we would need to. So if I might suggest that we need to discuss the possibility of a posted bond or a cash bond in lieu of a bond that might be available from an insurer. I don't want to overburden the producers, but I would hate to see that we would simply provide a waiver and walk away from the issue of security. It's not in the interest of the Department of Revenue or the State of Oregon not to have any threshold via a waiver. So maybe we would entertain something along the lines of a cash bond whose requirements might be different significantly than the stated requirements for a surety bond that would be available at a relatively low cost from an insurer. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Makes sense. Thank you, Senator. The other question I had was on page 17, the energy and water use report, basically by the license applicant. Would a city such as, say, Ashland have the ability to communicate with the commission and express concerns, saying we would really rather you not issue licenses to a growing operation that is going to use our electrical utility at a rate that is so far beyond what a normal commercial rate of use would be? Would the city have any ability to impact that where the commission would set the marks or deal with that report?
Representative Buckley, I believe with this language, no, because this language really requires merely a report describing water and energy usage for purposes of the upcoming year. May I talk about my understanding was that that it's desirable to have this information on hand for a work group that's going to be addressing this issue more thoroughly, or to maybe replace it with, if time allows in this session, replace it with language relating to energy usage plan. But right now, the language merely requires a report detailing what their energy and water usage is going to be for the upcoming year. So we would have to address that through amendment or in a future session if desired.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Cruz.
Just follow up on Representative Buckley, because you talk about water use. I mean, you get into water rights and you get into allocations. I mean, are we delving into that at all in this? Or, you know, they can have a plan and then the water's not there. So, I mean, are we giving them a seat at the table higher than existing uses in any way, shape, or form?
Senator Cruz, I know any other generally applicable law would pertain to marijuana licensees the same as it would apply to anybody else, so they're not getting an elevated stance. This language is merely to basically start collecting data related to water use and energy use for purposes of attempting to hopefully create further legislation down the road if those usage marks are much higher than expected or for other similar types of operations.
I guess, Madam Chair, I'm just looking at it. It's whether it's an indoor or outdoor, it's an ag product, it's an ag application, and the availability of water would be the same as it is for any other agriculture. I know, like myself, for example, we're purchasing some more reserve this year because we're going to have a drought, you know, that sort of thing, you know, and we have water rights and things like that. So I just want to make sure we're not messing with the current system.
Thank you, Senator. No, and so I think that my office has been one pushing this on behalf of my city, asking for at least some attention to it. The city of Arcata, California, experienced such an increase in indoor grows that they had significant problems with utility uses in their community, and ended up adopting an ordinance that actually increased the price of utility use at a certain point to try to mitigate that impact that they were having. So we're not trying to change the current system. We're just trying to at least have a path forward to mitigate extreme energy use should that be a component of indoor growing.
Well, and I appreciate that, Representative. I guess I'm just looking at the fact that two-thirds of the counties in the state are already under drought conditions, yeah. And we will all be there before the summer's over. So,
I think that's a great point. I think I remember when PGE came and talked to us about energy use for indoor grows, and they noted how beneficial it would be if they could know in advance if someone was going to start up a significant indoor grow. So I think, you know, even setting aside the constituent request that you're responding to as part of this work, I think it'll be useful to have people kind of think through how much electricity they're going to need to do their growth so that the service providers can be making plans to accommodate that. But plenty of opportunity to modify or give input on this. So thanks for registering those thoughts. Do you have more in your string of?
I have some. When we're done, I have some thoughts on some next steps. But
so we had. Representative Olson had been working on some great reclassification of crimes, and we have some taxation elements. I don't know if that's something that you're moving to next, or if we're...
I could cover those.
Would you mind just kind of quickly walking us through? Thanks.
A lot of the other provisions the committee is seeing... Chair Leininger. A lot of the other provisions the committee's seen before, or they're largely boilerplate or template language, so I don't have to, like, walk through each one of them. The next major portion of the bill is the point of sale taxation, which begins on page 52. And this section is largely based on a template that our office has developed and our fine deputy, Catherine Toswell, has developed for purposes of creating point of sale taxation provisions for other types of items. I think that the first one that this body passed was related to disposable cell phones. I can't remember exactly, but it's a template that works, and I can show you a specific provision that'll show you exactly how well it ties into current Department of Revenue processes. The other thing that should be noted is that this language has already been looked at by the Department of Revenue, so the agency's looked at it. We've worked with the agency through the now absent Chair Burdick. I think most people know that this is something that she's been working on. The important thing to look at is Section 70, which is on page 53. This is the mandate. The tax is hereby imposed upon retail sale of marijuana items in this state. The tax shall be collected at the point of sale of a marijuana item by a marijuana retailer at the time at which the sale occurs, and then the tax imposed under this section shall be imposed at the rate of... And we have specifically left the rates for the different types of marijuana products here blank. I believe that LRO, Legislative Revenue Office, is working on this. And the idea is to come back with numbers that would impose a tax that would result in substantially the same revenue, or, you know, the same revenue as what was projected for the original Measure 91. So that's what we're waiting on right now.
So I want to make sure that people understand who may be listening in, because we're inviting your feedback on this. We got a fair amount of feedback that having the tax imposed at a point of sale instead of at the point of harvest would be welcomed by people in the industry as more efficient and easy to deal with. And so Co-Chair Burdick went forth and tried to flesh out what that would look like. But I think out of respect for the tax rates in the in Measure 91, the desire, as I understand it, is to cleave to those, to not depart from those tax rates, but to figure out a way to memorialize it in this new, you know, point of sale taxation method, and Department of Revenue is still figuring out exactly how you translate that, so it's the same thing but applied in this point of sale way. So feel free to give us your input on this. If you like it and you feel good that we're trying to explore something in response to community input, great. If it makes you really anxious or frustrated, let us know. You know, we want to hear from you.
Just a few things I want to point out throughout this template. Section 72 on page 55, we've modified the template to specifically allow the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to enter into an agreement with the Department of Revenue for the purposes of administrating these acts, so that they can kind of divvy up, you know, what the different duties, functions, and powers will be. The Department of Revenue is certainly going to be the driver here if this portion of this bill, or this amendment to a bill, were to be enacted into law. But the commission still has a role to play, and there will be a memorandum of understanding between the two in order to assist the department in the duties, functions, and powers of collecting the tax. So we have included that language. The language that is probably the most helpful to understand is on page, let me see here, I've lost it, page 57, section 77, I believe. Apologies, that was not the right section. What I wanted to address is that we have a provision in this template that basically ties the Department of Revenue processes into all their existing processes for collecting taxes and for procedures related to taxes. I've lost the language right now, I apologize. But the idea is that we're not going to reinvent the wheel here. We basically connect it with ORS chapters 315, 316, and 317, and allow the department to use all of its existing powers as it sees fit, not necessarily requiring them, but as it sees fit, in order for taxation collection purposes. That's why the template works really well for this purpose. And a lot of the comments for Senate Bill 844-1, if I remember correctly, were around the taxation issue and hopefully working through some of those issues as to how is this going to be implemented, how is it going to look, should the commission have these powers or not. The template resolves a lot of these problems right from the get-go. One of the things that I do want to mention real quickly before I move on is that this is probably the only portion of this amendment that'll take me time to amend. If we decide to take it out, go back to the tonnage tax, that'll take me time to amend. The rest of the amendment, this dash one amendment, has been constructed so that I can amend it very quickly and amend it basically on the fly and be very responsive to you. So if this is something that comes out, it will take me time to go through it, just so you know.
Senator Pazlansky and then Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding the shift to a point of sales tax, I do believe this is appropriate after giving much consideration. It seems to me that we need to have a flexibility with what the market pricing is of the products. When we look at what was in 91, if you take, let's just say, an ounce of marijuana flowers was going for $100, at $35 an ounce, that's a 35% tax. That's almost the same amount as what Washington State is 40. And clearly, if we're going to make the inroads that we want to against the black market, we need to have much more flexibility. So when the price changes, it's not going to be, inducive for the black market to be able to undercut the state.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question I have is a practicality question. If I understand, and I probably don't very well, the OLCC model for collecting point-of-sale taxes, the OLCC agent does an inventory report, a daily sales report, and then does a daily deposit. And that keeps the OLCC current on what is being sold, which specific items of the inventory that are being sold. And there's a penny-for-penny accounting of the tax dollars that would then be transferred electronically to the state of Oregon. I assume that's the model that we're contemplating here. So, the question that I keep bumping up against is that the OLCC agent has access to the banking system and electronic transfers. It is not enjoined in any way by the money laundering statutes. So if we've used that model, are we absolutely, positively, without question, certain that the marijuana retailer can use the system that accesses the federal banking system for wire transfers to the Department of Revenue? Simple question, big implications. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Did you want to take that?
We did issue an opinion on this earlier this week. We've been researching the issue. There is a general exemption in the Controlled Substances Act for purposes of states basically being able to regulate monies related to controlled substances. I actually don't have the opinion with me, and I probably should, so I could read from it. I would be happy to return to that issue for the committee itself, procure that opinion for you so that you guys would have it on hand that addresses that specific question.
And, Madam Chairman, the correct answer to that question is yes. We're absolutely certain. And if there's any other answer to that question, then we need to sort of retool the whole revenue assumption that we're making. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think that makes sense. So I have Senator Prezonsky, and then Senator Beyer. Did you have a hand up? Senator Cruz, did you have a hand up?
I did. The Controlled Substances Act covers Schedule 1 as well?
Schedule 1 is part of the Controlled Substances Act.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if we could just follow up on what Senator Farioli asked about the model that's being used. I know that there's been some discussion about the model that retailers are using for these cell phones, disposable cell phones. Is it the same model, or is it a different model? I'm just curious as to do we have ones to pick from. So if the answer isn't yes, whether there's another way to get to that same result that we want.
As Senator Prezonsky, I'm sure that there would be if there was a problem. But again, our office has been looking at the issue, and we're certain that this is not going to be an issue.
Okay.
Madam Chair, just to follow up, somebody in Washington State and somebody in Colorado has already answered this question. They would have had to in order to accept their tax payments. I just want to make sure that detail's part of the record and clearly articulated.
Okay, great. All right. So, and of course, this is our introductory conversation about this, and there'll be opportunity. I'm glad you're flagging those issues so that we can get definitive word back. But it sounds like we actually do have definitive word from our council.
And Madam Chair,
we can talk about it more.
Might be so bold.
Yeah.
The same question will have to be answered for municipalities who have property taxes, for counties who would assess property taxes, and other jurisdictions that are subdivisions of the state of Oregon.
Right.
So that there won't be a question about whether or not an individual grower or other licensee can present proceeds from this activity to pay their property taxes, their income taxes, There's city and county taxes.
And as you know, this the payment of taxes using proceeds from legal marijuana businesses has been happening in Colorado and Washington State, and so I'm sure we'll get some good guidance from that. But we'll circle back on that issue. Senator Beyer, did you have a thing? Okay, please go ahead.
He's got a thing, but he doesn't have a question.
Thank you for that clarification.
I'm just going to move on to the next major portion, and I'll just address it briefly. It begins on page 72. It's the testing provision. It's the same language, again, as I discussed earlier, from Senate Bill 844-6 amendments. Probably not a lot to revisit there. Of course, it's a new amendment to a new bill, so plenty of time to take a second look, I guess. But this has been through the committee before, and you guys have seen the language before. The only difference here, again, is that we have removed from this any references to medical marijuana processing sites. We don't know if they're going to exist in this bill or not, but we do have a repealer in this bill that basically allows the testing provisions of the other two bills to control if one of them should pass. So there will be no conflict in law if one of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act bills passes and this bill passes. Same statement with respect to packaging and labeling, beginning on page 80. It's the same language, largely only removing references that were created for purposes of the rewrite of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. Otherwise, the language is exactly the same. Nurseries. This is something that we've been working with industry, and the idea here is to create a system of a system where immature marijuana plants may be propagated and seeds may be breeded and basically sold or transferred into either the medical market or into the recreational market. This is also the only provision of this act that will become operative quite early, and I'll just point that out early on, and I'll explain the purpose of that in a minute. There has been some discussion about, well, does this mean that, you know, a marijuana growth site underneath the Medical Marijuana Act or a producer underneath Measure 91 won't be able to propagate immature plants or breed seeds? It does not. We have specifically excluded from the provisions of the act registered marijuana growth sites, producers underneath Measure 91, and because we use general language with regard to cannabis seeds as opposed to marijuana as a definition, the industrial hemp growers underneath the industrial hemp statute. So they're exempted. They'll still be able to propagate immature plants. They'll still be able to breed their own seeds. But what this does is it creates a new licensing scheme specifically for purposes of feeding the medical and the recreational system by transferring into those systems or selling into those systems immature plants or seeds. The nursery statutes here, they allow the sale of seeds or the sale of immature plants to both grow sites and dispensaries underneath the Medical Marijuana Act, and they allow for the transfer of immature marijuana plants and seeds, or sale, excuse me, to both recreational stores and recreational stores, wholesalers, and producers underneath Measure 91. So they can sell into basically most of the licensed premises, the ones that make sense. It follows fairly standard boilerplate language where we basically direct the commission to develop qualifications for certification, processes for applying for and renewing a certificate, and fees for applying for receiving and renewing a certificate. We also direct the commission to come up with reasonable limitations on operations necessary to control plant pests and plant diseases and protect the public health and safety, and we direct the commission and give it the authority to track the seeds using the seed and sale tracking system that it develops for purposes of 91. So they'll be able to use the seed to sale here. The seed to sale tracking system will not be allowed to carry into the medical program if that is where they're going to be transferring or selling it. So it will only be for stuff that's going into the 91 system. If it goes into the medical system at the point at which it's transferred, then there's a cutoff point for that.
So, Mr. Mayor, I'm hoping that in about the next 5 minutes you can cover the research certification and crime part.
Yep.
And then leave, I think Representative Buckley wanted to make a comment. If anyone else has any closing comments before we hit the time, that would be great. Thank you.
Research certification on page 90, section 119. Basically, we direct the authority along with the commission and the Department of Agriculture to establish a program for the purpose of identifying and certifying private and public researchers of cannabis. We wrote this very broadly so that the authority can identify individuals, businesses, nonprofit organizations, research institutions, or public entities that are conducting research in the following areas. On the medical side, clinical research. And on the agricultural side, agricultural research. And then there are some there's some descriptive language there, the including language that provides some direction for what might constitute appropriate clinical or agricultural research. But certainly the language isn't limiting. And then we've given some directions on what type of researchers should be certified. Do they have access to public or private funding? What's going to be the overall cost of the research? What's the overall benefit to the cannabis industry and to public health and safety or overall knowledge of cannabis? Likelihood that the candidate's research will result in measurable quantitative or qualitative effects and legal barriers to conducting a candidate's research. We did not want to cut out public institutions such as OSU and those from the possibility of being certified underneath this section at one point. But again, the direction is to take a look at, are there specific legal barriers at this time to awarding a certificate? And that would preclude some of those public institutions from being certified currently. It's a very basic section at this point. Sure, we'll get some feedback on it. We'll be able to improve it.
And the purpose behind it is to enable people to possess large amounts of marijuana so that they can do this work that they wouldn't otherwise be able legally to possess. So.
Right. It would only be for purposes of research. They're not selling or transferring. They're basically allowed to conduct research. We do have the standard boilerplate exemption language from the criminal laws of this state there. The crimes sections we have specifically exempted from I'm going to call them the school crimes, manufacturing or delivering within 1,000 feet of a school. We've specifically exempted both licensee and licensee representatives from those criminal acts, as well as a person acting within the scope of and in compliance with Section 6 of Measure 91, which is the home grow provision. So clear statutory direction that that what's authorized in 91 is not going to be constitute a crime underneath the 1,000 feet within a school crimes with regard to manufacturing and delivering marijuana. For Section 122 on page 92 and Section 123 on page 93, those are the crimes of manufacturing and delivering marijuana. The initial language that was suggested is that we reduce these crimes to Class C felonies, but there was a request by the actual requester of this amendment to go ahead and leave these blank at this time for purposes of discussion. For instance, currently unlawful manufacture of marijuana is a Class B felony. Reduce it to a C felony was the original idea, but again, the actual requester of this amendment did not want to presume what the committee would decide, so we went ahead and included blanks for discussion. And same thing with the delivery statutes. Unlawful delivery of marijuana is a B felony if for consideration and a C felony if for no consideration. Again, the original idea here was reduce it at least to a C felony in all instances. On page 94, section 124, specifically lines 20 through 30, unlawful possession for persons under 21 years of age. The idea here was to remove references to the current statute. Unlawful possession, for instance, underneath the current statute of 4 ounces or more of marijuana by a person under 21 years of age is a Class C felony. And I think there's some desire to maybe for the committee to discuss if you're 20 years and 360 days old and you have 4 ounces of marijuana at home, it's a C felony, and if you would be 10 days older, you would be scot-free. So the idea was to maybe discuss lowering those limits for persons who are under 21 years of age. And then there's just some basic cleanup in here with regard to the statutes. I do think that our office does need to do some more work with the possession statute as a whole. It in part uses definitions currently from Measure 91, and it in part uses definitions that were incorporated during the 2013 session about a marijuana product in liquid and solid form. I think maybe we should just sync it all up with Measure 91 at this point. But so maybe a little bit of retooling there on our office's behalf. Conforming amendments. The retail drug outlets section on page 101, this was simply written for those pharmacies that are located in big box stores, and if there's a manager of the store, doesn't feel like he has the right to deal with this type of situation. I think the specific situation it came from was marijuana being left unattended in a big box store pharmacy, and the manager basically felt like in that situation he didn't have any statutory authority for being able to collect it and dispose of it properly, and so we have gone ahead and written in something that will allow them to do that under state law.
May I interrupt you?
Yeah.
The expungement language we had been talking about, did you have a chance to incorporate that in? I know you were sprinting to finish that.
Right. I did not get a chance to incorporate the expungement language. The intent for this first draft was to include expungement language for at least all possession crimes.
Right, and then that was my hope. And then I know that Representative Olson's really good thinking around reclassifying some crimes is also consistent with making them more easy to expunge. Is that right? Can you speak to that? Or Representative Olson, would you like to? When things go from a B felony to a C felony?
Yeah, going forward, and this wouldn't apply to people who are currently convicted of a marijuana crime, and that's where we would have to do work on the expungement. But if you do reduce it down to a C felony, it does allow for an easier path to expungement than for other types of felony crimes. So correct?
That's right.
So going forward, if you are convicted, it would allow for easier expungement in all cases. But I think that the expungement language that we need to work with in this particular draft is for if we want to address past crimes and people are currently convicted.
Right. Does anybody have so thank you so much. Do you feel like you've been able to get through that last bit? And we will have more opportunity. Like you were able to.
Oh, yeah.
Got, you nailed
great.
It. You did a great job. You did tremendous work. So thank you. And before we close, I wanted to offer people an opportunity to make some comments. Senator Farioli had a hand up, and then I know Representative Buckley wanted to say something.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Great work, Mark. It lends credibility to the requirement, or at least the suggestion that I made, that we should get the before picture of our drafter, because after, he's going to look different than he does even now. Madam Chair, the in previous iterations of bills, I've asked for the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 750, another Dash amendment to another 844, the Dash 4s. Madam Chair, they have all have to do with the same issue. That's the temporary authority for dispensaries to offer retail products, temporary authority for dispensaries to collect taxes. Mm-hmm. So I would be requesting that amendment for the bill currently before us, Senate Bill 3400. My staff hasn't already requested it. They're probably ahead of me already, but they haven't already requested it. They're just putting you on notice. But, Madam Chair, the really important thing I want to put on the record with that regard is I do not want to hear from the Department of the OLCC that for whatever reason, they're not aware that this will be coming, that they're not capable of doing it, that they, you know, have no staff, no temporary rule ready in draft form. I'm just letting them know those will not be welcome explanations. So, you know, there should be no mystery. We've been talking about this for at least 60 days, if not longer. I will expect the department to arrive at some point in the future in consideration of that amendment, ready to tell me how they will implement the temporary authority for collecting taxes and limited scope retail sales at dispensaries. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. And you know he means it. And if it doesn't happen on time, the Senate may form its own committee and move forward. I think that Representative Buckley had a comment, and then Senator Pazoski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, just to kind of take off from where you just commented, you know, last week during the revenue forecast, there was a disruption of the committee, and there were several arrests made. And I was surprised to learn that there is actually in statute a law against obstruction of the legislative process. And my second thought was, wow, has the Senate ever been charged with that?
Or the House could be as well.
And, I'll convey this request too to Senator Burdick as well. I hope she is feeling much better. I think what's happened, and I'll try to be as gentle as possible with my comments, is that in the bill that was passed by the Senate committee today, it's not only that you took your own ball and went home, you took our ball too. We worked very hard on the legislation around the medical marijuana program, and when we reached a point of impasse, the decision was made to not only take the bill, but also to move it across the Senate floor with a $10 million fiscal. And I would just have to issue my objection to that. And the request I'm making is that we continue to search for principled compromise in this committee. That's what a joint committee needs to do, and that's how we can get to a good result. But if it's the goal of the Senate to simply replay the last episode we've been through, and if the Senate does want to change the opt-out provision, Measure 91, my request would be, out of respect and courtesy, that you go ahead and do that in your Senate committee. To please don't take the time of this committee, but go ahead and do that in your committee. Pass it out as a standalone bill. Please take public testimony on it. I think it's really important to have public testimony on bills that impact people's lives. But I would make that request of you. If the desire is to do an opt-out different than Measure 91, then please put that through your Senate committee and let that live on its own. Please don't take our ball and go home again. Please let us work on the Measure 91 bill collectively as this joint committee has been charged to do. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Anybody want to follow that?
Well, I actually wanted to say something that had nothing to do with this. I'll tell you that. That wasn't the second segue I was looking for, but I'll tell you, you know, from my perspective, I have for one senator that's on this committee is not looking to change what was put in Measure 91 as to how local option works. So that's my commitment as it has been. Regarding the taxing, I think one of the things that we may want to look at is maybe taking Senator Farioli's and seeing how we can accomplish that through the Oregon Health Authority instead of having OLCC engaged in it. I really think OLCC needs to stay home doing what they're supposed to be doing and implementing 91 and not having a diversion, because it could actually cause them to be delayed in actually getting the program up and running further than they are. And I think that OHA will be able to monitor and do what needs to be done to collect the tax, and we can keep OLCC focused on their primary task, which is getting the program up and running. And I'll talk to Senator Farioli about some suggestions of how we might be able to do that.
Great. Well, thank you, everybody. So Wednesday, we're going to have a public hearing on this bill. So please join us and bring your ideas. Feel free to email us in the meantime to let us know what you're thinking. But thank you, everyone, and thank you to this group of people. I mean, this is not an easy process, and we're going to move forward and get something good done. So good night. Meeting adjourned. To get something good done. So good night. Meeting adjourned.